Well, in this area of difficult patients or colleagues, of course, you know, when you've been around as long as I have, and I've been also chief of medicine of a hospital, I've been chief of staff, been president of the medical staff, and now president of Weimar Institute, and have also had, you know, lots of dealings with colleagues and scores of patients. You can imagine that we've had some very difficult ones to deal with, and so it's normally best to choose something a little more recent. But one of the things I've noticed in dealing with difficult patients and colleagues is this quote here: "The influence of the Spirit of God is the very best medicine for disease." And I should say it's also the very best medicine for dealing with the difficult people. The more deeply heavenly influences I realize, the more sure will be the recovery of the believing invalid. And a little over a year ago, we had a very, of course, every one of our patients that come to depression and anxiety recovery tend to be quite difficult, some more difficult than others. But we had an individual who came to us who had been misled into coming to our program. She had had her fifth suicide attempt shortly before coming. A little bit of background on her. Her parents became Adventists when she was in high school. And as new Adventists, they were excited to send her to one of our stalwart colleges, Southern Adventist University. But you know, being a new Adventist and not necessarily endorsing all the principles, within the first year she got in trouble in regards to the dress code. And she wasn't quite as compliant as our previous speaker up here. And as a result, there were some disciplinary actions that were taken. She was still allowed to be at the university, but there was some mild discipline, but still it offended this young girl, and she didn't want to have anything to do with Adventist schools or universities, and she huffed out of there and went back to her home and ended up taking college in a secular environment. Finished nursing school, became a critical care nurse, but in the process started doing what all college students kind of do in that environment, started drinking and all of that sort of thing. I had unhealthy relationships with men. Bright girl, though, bright enough to be a good critical care nurse and get her critical care certification. But just as a result of her drinking, drugs, and depression, and relationship issues, she started to try to exit this world. There were three attempts prior to her going to AA and actually giving up alcohol for 6 years. During this process, she did have a marriage, had a child, but that marriage didn't last, and as the divorce was occurring, she started drinking again. And it was getting bad enough now that she was missing work. She was being called to task for errors that were being made in her work environment. She needed antidepressants. She needed anti-anxiety drugs. And to try to focus at work, she needed Adderall, which is a stimulant. And she was barely hanging on. When she started drinking again, however, everything fell apart. And this time, she was going to be successful in ending her life. She went out in her backyard to not make a mess in the house, and she took a gun, and she put it to her head, and she pulled the trigger while in a drunken stupor. And she could not get the gun to work, the trigger jammed. And In her frustration, she called her boyfriend. She had another boyfriend now. She called her father. They came over. The boyfriend was able to get the gun unjammed. But she was obviously taken to the psychiatric institution. I should tell you what state she's from. She's from Texas. And Texas is, of course, the big gun state in the union, and they're not going to allow their Second Amendment rights to be disregarded. So everybody knows how to operate guns in Texas. And that's why mass murders in Texas are not a good idea, because somebody's going to have a gun and take the murderer out pretty quick. But anyways, that's Texas. So she's in a psych ward. And prior to her psych ward experience, she was on lorazepam. Do you guys have lorazepam here? Yep. I don't know if it's different names. Okay. So she's on lorazepam, 2 milligrams, 4 times a day prior to being admitted there. And of course, since she had just ended her life, and I don't know the psychiatrists of the unit that she was being admitted to, but the psychiatrist said, you know, it's too dangerous to be having her on benzo. She's ending her life, and so takes her off of lorazepam abruptly. And now she goes into psychosis, hallucinations, they're having to fight her. And finally, the psychiatrist puts her on clonazepam, a longer-acting benzo. Do you guys have that one, too? Okay. And so she is now on a couple of milligrams 4 times. Well, I think it was maybe 1 milligram 4 times a day. They didn't do the equivalent dose of 2 4 times a day. And she's in there a number of days, and finally she's able to be discharged. During that time there, she meets a millionaire alcoholic and starts forming another relationship. This guy has lots of money and really seems to like her and all of that. This time when she gets out, being in an ICU unit, she had seen something happen where somebody had coded right in front of her as a result of a suicide attempt that was painless. And what they did is they took a fentanyl patch. Do you guys have those? All right. And, you know, with the fentanyl patch, just put it all there, wiped it all on the mucous membranes, and you go into cardiopulmonary arrest, and you're done. And so after seeing that happen, that got in her mind. And so she checked herself into a Motel 6. This is a cheap motel, so cheap that they don't always do cleanup every day. she did that. And nobody heard from her for days. And her parents knew that she was dead somewhere, that they were going to find her. Everybody knew what she was up to, that she was going to be dead. And she actually did not die. She woke up 3 days later in the same position, now with bed sores all on her leg and all of those things. So she calls her father again, and it turns out I'm speaking in her home state at that time. And I'm not even sure why I was there. I should admit that some speaking appointments, they line me up, and then afterwards I wonder, how in the world did I ever agree to this? And it was one of those speaking appointments. There was actually a very excited doctor to be there, or to have me there, and he brought me into a big conference event that I wasn't necessarily invited by the conference officials. But anyways, a friend of her mother's found out I was there, said, can Nedley deal with this in his depression recovery program? So I was asked that question, and I said, yes, we've had individuals like this. So the next program, here she is, and her mother told her that this was a nice vacation resort for her to go to. And didn't tell her anything about the religious connection. So this girl is, she's also a smoker, so she's got multiple addictions. She's on benzos. She's on all of this stuff, and she arrives, and right away she's calling the nurse case manager saying, this is not a place for me. This is not a place for me. This is a religious place, and it needs to, you know, I need to get out of here. So instead of waiting for the first psychology visit, the psychologist was assigned to her right away and said, you know, what is it? How come you're so nervous? And she went into, I don't fit in. I don't want to have anything to do with God. I don't want to have anything to do with religion. And furthermore, and she says, well, why are you so nervous? Well, you know, I'm trying to come off of these benzos, but I need to have a cigarette. And this is a smoke-free campus. And the psychologist says, go out in the woods, smoke your cigarette, come back, and I will not tell Dr. Nedley or anybody here at Weimar Institute. And so, and in fact, I actually didn't hear about this until after Christy had, you know, after the change had taken place. But nonetheless, she went out there and did that, and she stayed that night. And every day, she wanted to leave. The spiritual counselor had to talk to her the next day, the administrator the next day. And she also has social phobia. When she eats, she just gets out of there. And she keeps talking about how she doesn't fit in. And one of the, when people say, why do you say you're not fitting in? I've noticed none of the staff has tattoos. And I don't fit in around people that don't have tattoos. And our administrator of the program says, should I show her my tattoo? And I said, no, this is not about tattoos. Keep your clothes on. And let's just not worry about that statement. That's not what this is about. But despite her barely being in the program, because in groups, she would always find a way to exit the group with her phobias. And she wasn't really communicating with anybody. But by day six, that's when we have our burning. And we wondered what she was going to burn, but she burned her cigarettes. We thought that was good. She actually burned her typical American diet. She made a commitment to become a vegetarian. As someone who was sharp and in science, she saw the science of a plant-based diet in the program, and she said, you know, I need to try this. I haven't tried this before. And she also burned her relationships with men. So we were pretty excited about this commitment that she has made. We thought, well, you know, things are getting through a little more than we thought. But after something like that happens, what do you think happens the next day? You know, the devil almost had her. He basically, you know, came this close to having her a couple of times. And he's getting angry at this point because she's starting to turn around. And so he attacks. And the next day, she has her bags packed and she's going out of there. And the administrator called me and says, Dr. Nedley, Christy is leaving. She has her bags packed. She called an Uber. They're taking her out of here. And the counselor isn't going to work. The spiritual counselor isn't going to work. I'm not going to work. If you don't get over here, she's out of here. But I think you're the only one that's going to be able to help her. So I went over and I met her there in the lobby as she's pulling these things out. And I said, Christy, where are you going? She says, I'm going to check in to a local hotel. I said, Christy, I can't allow you to do that. She says, I thought this is a voluntary program. I said, it is a voluntary program until it becomes involuntary. I said, I know what you do when you check into hotels. I can't have you do that. She says, well, I'm going to call my attorney. This is not right. And she says, I said, well, I can't take you there. She says, where can you take me? I said, there's only one place I can take you. If you leave here, and that's the Sacramento Psychiatric Hospital. She says, well, go ahead and take me there. She goes, I'll fit in over there. And at that point, I got on the phone. I hadn't talked to her parents at all. Didn't even know much background about them except what she had told me. So I got on the phone to see how much support, because, you know, it's just like a patient in ICU that's about ready to die. And she, the parents say, what's going on? And we went through the whole history and things. And, of course, part of the issue is we only have 10 days, and I am trying to get her off of her benzos. You know, at this point, she was on clonazepam, 0.5 milligrams. One of the reasons why we're successful is the contrast baths and the Livella and things like that. But people do want to run when they're coming off of benzos. So it's not necessarily surprising. But I explained that to them as well. And they said, whatever it takes, we know she's getting help there. Whatever it takes, please keep her there. Well, with that background and realizing I wasn't really in the legal trouble that maybe she thought I was, I came back, and actually the administrator had taken over. She had also gone through the program before and was a patient there. And Christy had calmed down, and she was ready to go back to her room. But I did tell my staff, I said, you know, really we should take her to the Sacramento Psychiatric Facility because we're not a 24/7 supervision. We don't have cameras in the room. I said, there's only one way I will allow her to stay here tonight. And that is if you guys rotate, if you have volunteers to rotate, to have your ear right outside the door. And if anything happens, you barge into that room if you hear something happening. And two of my nurse volunteered right away, and my administrator volunteered right away. And they said, we'll do it. And she slept through the entire night. They didn't have to barge in at all. She had no idea that they were out there in the room monitoring her like that. And then that next day, she began to cooperate. She basically had the three-day program. And at the time that she was getting ready to leave on Sunday, we looked at the before and after score, saw what was happening. She was no longer actively suicidal, but I said, Christy, you're not ready to go. I said, you've had the three-day program. You need the 10-day program. You need to stay. And this is what we'll do if you stay. She goes, well, I'll let you know in the morning. Well, in the morning, without, and our nurse was relatively new, somehow this hadn't gotten across, but in the morning, she told me she wasn't going to stay, she was going home. And she asked for her cigarettes on the way out the door. And I said, and I didn't know that at the time when I saw her, but I said, Christy, you are going to need us again, and you know where we live. I said, call us. You're going to need us. She goes, oh, I'm going to try to do this program. Well, she went home. One of the reasons why she wanted to go home is the multimillionaire had a celebration date for her. She went back to smoking. She went back to doing some of the things that she had done, but she was at least exercising, and she was running about 6 days later, and in her town, it was called Bethesda. It's a suburb of Dallas, Texas. All she could see was SDA on the sign. Then she ran past a house where we had told her there was a physician that lived that she could follow up with, who was a good, faithful Adventist physician who would have been able to help her. And she realized, I'm running away from God, and I'm running away from the very things that can help. If they'll take me back, I'll go back. And so she called and says, can I come back? She came back. And after doing all that, it was more than just 7 days that we had to deal with her. We were going off of the benzos and all of those things. But 2 weeks into the program, she asked for Bible studies. And she became very convinced of the truths of the Word of God. They had changed her life. She was now off all of her benzos. She was getting off her antidepressants. She was feeling far better, and at week 2.5, I said, Christy, do you feel like you're ready to go? We had evaluated her, And she says, I'm not going to say if I'm ready to go. I don't trust myself. You'll have to tell me. And I said, Christy, you are ready to go. And she says, I was hoping you would say I'm not ready. Because I love it here. I just love it here. And before she left, she asked if she could stay a few days and get baptized. And she was baptized in Moses Rock. And Christy now has become our nurse in the DRP program. She actually says she thinks she's saving more lives in this program than she ever saved as an ICU nurse. And she is so compassionate with the others. And, you know, we were praying for her. Our staff was praying for her as we pray for all of the patients. But now she prays for us. She was just texting me on the way over, praying that some souls will be reached from what you're sharing in Australia. And she is a true and faithful person, and true and faithful to the Lord's calling. Her son, she's now a great mother. She's got a very intelligent son. But her goal is, right now, she flies from Texas to Weimar every time we put on a program. Her goal is to actually move to Weimar. She loves it there. We're not sure it's best for her because the father lives in Texas and, you know, all the complications of that sort of thing. But she wants out there every program, and she is an inspiration to all of our patients. And so this is how a difficult patient that we could have gotten frustrated with, could have laid down the law for her, although we did lay down the law in some areas. But the Lord can work through a staff that is open to the Spirit of God's leading.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.